You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio over a year ago in October of 2014. There was a call for police to respond. I'm not sure what the original call was, but if you've watched the video or if you know anything about the video, perhaps by now you know that it has been released a year after, over almost 400 days after the shooting. A young man was in the middle of the street brandishing possibly a knife. If you watch the video, there is a shiny object in his hand. And several squad cars arrive, and two officers are out of the car with their weapons drawn. I don't know if you watch it and count. I counted about 5-6 seconds before they opened fire, and that's where we are tonight. We have Attorney Rich Lenkoff, who is the more attractive and more talented half of Legal Face Off on WGN Plus. How are you doing, Rich?
Good, Patty. How are you?
I'm good. I'm. You know, there's a lot going on tonight. It's stressful, and I want to have a conversation with everybody. But it seems like everyone has opinions. But there are the legal aspects of this that are, for a better phrase, black and white. I guess is there black and white in this as far as clear cut for why it would take the state's attorney 400 days to bring charges?
There's no black and white on it. I mean, these things do take time. I think that there was some politics involved. I think the fact that she released it the day before the court imposed deadline is telling. Who knows how long it would have taken without that. So I don't think it should have taken this long. I think anyone who's seen the video, it's fairly clear that there was enough probable cause to charge him way earlier than this long. So, yeah, I think it's a little unusual that it took this long. I think people have the right to be upset. On the other hand, you know, again, police shootings do take time, especially when, as Anita Alvarez said, the federal government is also investigating. So I give her some credibility, but it took way too long, I think.
Well, when you say that there's a lot to investigate here, do you think include what the procedure was carried out by the Chicago Police Department in the moments following the shooting? Not just by the officer, right?
Yes. I mean, the fact that there were so many officers, the fact that, the other officers weren't shooting. I mean, there was a lot involved. But again, you know, you have the resources of one of the biggest state's attorney's offices in the country. You have a seasoned state's attorney. I don't think it should have taken this long. I don't really buy her argument that these things often take longer, especially given the climate that we're in. She should have known that this video would raise a lot of emotion issues, and I think she should have concluded the investigation way earlier.
When you say there were political reasons, you suspect, what are the political reasons for not sharing the video, for not releasing it sooner?
Well, you know, she has to answer to the police officers also. Remember, she has to deal with them every day. She needs them on her side. Most cases, you know, the grand majority of cases, the state's attorney and the police are working hand in hand to get to a successful prosecution. So, you know, she's very conscious of the relationship that she has to maintain with the police, while also considering the public's right to know, and also not tainting the jury pool. I mean, a lot of people obviously have seen the video. They will have seen the video by the time this case gets to trial. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of different issues that she has to consider when bringing. Remember, this is the first time, at least that's been reported. Most of the media is reporting that this is the first time ever the Chicago police officer has been charged with first-degree murder. So, you know, she had to make sure that there was a good basis for doing so.
What is required in the charge of first-degree murder? What are the standards for that?
So you need to prove both. So it's defined as an unlawful killing that's both willful and premeditated.
Okay.
Meaning that it was committed after some kind of planning or lying in wait. That doesn't mean that there has to be a long period of time. You know, you often think, well, premeditation means there's some plot. That's not so. I mean, this could qualify as premeditation. It could qualify as willful. As you mentioned a few seconds ago, there was at least 5 or 6 seconds on the video between the time that the police rolled up and the time that the shooting took place. So that is enough to prove the premeditation required for first-degree murder.
And there are also now information about the fact that this particular police officer, Jason Van Dyke, had 18 complaints filed against him for excessive force. Will that be something that's used against him in this first-degree charge?
Probably. I mean, that's, you know, it's something, obviously, that his attorney will try to keep out as not relevant. The state will try to keep it in. The standard for that kind of thing is whether the prior conduct is more probative than prejudicial.
Mm-hmm.
That means whether it really can be used to prove that, you know, he had the intent necessary in this case versus, you know, it's just being used to show that he's a bad guy. So in other words, anytime you're trying to admit prior evidence of bad acts for any kind of defendant, the state has to prove that it has more probative value than its prejudicial effect on the jury, which I think in this case it probably will. I don't know the extent of the prior charges,
mm-hmm.
but I would imagine they would get in front of the jury.
Right. It includes excessive force and racial slurs, including two involving the use of a firearm in addition to the McDonald shooting. I'm going to take a call from one of our listeners who has a question about self-defense, I think. Do you mind, Rich?
No, of course.
Hey, Glenn, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Yourself?
I'm very well. It's an interesting evening, let's put it that way. What did you want to talk about?
Well, what I want to talk about is basically even if the individual officer life was threatened, what is the line between self-defense and just outright murder? And The more I'm listening to this, it's almost execution style. I haven't seen the video, probably won't see the video, but it's almost like they executed this gentleman. And so my question is, what is the line you cross between self-defense and either premeditated or otherwise murder?
Right. Okay.
I mean,
just like
2-3 bullets. Yeah, I don't know.
Right.
How many times did he reload?
He emptied his clip. 16 bullets. 1 second, Glenn. Go ahead, Rich.
He tried to reload. Actually, the report is that he tried to reload, and he was ordered to stand down by a fellow officer, which, you know, certainly goes to his intent, and certainly would be a strong indication that he wasn't acting in self-defense. I mean, the video, I think, it's hard to argue that he was acting in self-defense based on the video. I mean, number one, the victim is walking away. I mean, he's visibly walking to the right. He's not walking at all towards the officer, at least not on the video. You know, he receives a number of shots in his back. He doesn't lunge at him. He doesn't jump. It doesn't seem, again, from any viewing of the video, that the officer had any reasonable belief that his life was in danger. But to answer the caller's question, certainly an officer has the right to use lethal force if his life is threatened or if he perceives that. In this case, that's going to be the question. Obviously, the defense attorney has already come out. Dan Herbert has already said that there's more to the video. The state of mind of the officer was that he was being threatened by the knife. That's going to be the key question that the jury needs to decide, whether the officer's feeling that his life was being threatened was reasonable. From the video, I think it's a hard, it's almost insurmountable obstacle, but that's going to be the question in the trial.
I'm going to take one more call. Thank you, Glenn. I'm going to take one more call from Lisa, has a question about the video. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Patty. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
You know, I have so many emotions going on about all of this, especially now that this video has come to be. And I understand Freedom of Information Act. I get that. We have the right to know things. However, I really wonder, and believe me, I feel very strongly that this probably was a case of police misconduct. However, the jury pool is now tainted that this video has been released. I understand that there's a choice between a bench trial and a jury trial. And, you know, how can they go ahead and put all of this out for public viewing before a case has even come to trial? I don't understand.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Lisa. We'll get an answer from Rich. What do you think about that as far as
obviously a good question. I mean, the standard isn't whether the jury has seen the video. The standard will be whether the jury, having seen the video, can put aside any preconceived notions or bias or feelings about guilt or innocence and render a verdict based only on the evidence. Now, you know, you might think, well, that's really just legalese and that doesn't mean anything. And that could be. I mean, listen, we don't know ever to what extent a jury brings their bias into a case. And certainly someone who, you know, if you're a juror and you've seen the video, you've heard the mayor of Chicago already basically say this guy was guilty. I agree with you that would be tough to get a fair trial. But that's the system we have. I mean, right. That's the system we have. Now, you could argue that the video shouldn't have been released because it's a piece of evidence. A lot of people argue that. But again, in this era of social media, of everyone having a video, I mean, look at the protest now, having, you know, had the video held up for a year. Imagine if it would be another year before the case gets to trial and people didn't see the video. So,
right.
You know, it's a tough balance between society's need to see these kind of things and for the police to be transparent and maintaining that evidence.
Well, Rich, you've shared a lot of insight on this, especially with your legal expertise as the better half of Legal Face Off, which everyone can check out on WGN Radio. WGN Radio Plus.com?
WGN Plus.com.
And Jason Whiteside's the other guy. Rich, we'd love to check in with you again maybe next week. I know that we've run out of time, and our newsman probably is itching for me to press the spots button. But thank you so much for joining us. And really, that was very helpful, I think, for our conversation.
Thanks, Patty. Thanks for having me.
Of course. And to our other callers, Joe, I agree. We should be definitely rewarding our police officers who do a great job. There's no doubt about that, and we miss talking to you. And also, Rich, if you would hold on the line, you're asking about the outrage about the daily violence. We have a conversation we're going to continue after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. And as Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon have been reporting, tonight's big story, the biggest news of the day, is that the city of Chicago has released a videotape of a young man being shot by the Chicago Police Department, Officer Jason Van Dyke. And the shooting of Laquan McDonald is something that's on a lot of our minds right now. And with us is Pastor Corey Brooks, who is a pastor, a businessman, a philanthropist, a songwriter, mentor, and spiritual coach, and has been urging peaceful protests tonight. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, and thank you for having me on the show on WGN. I appreciate it.
Well, you know, we've heard your voice many times on the station. I remember hearing you, I believe you were on the rooftops of demanding
absolutely
an attention for violence, and John Williams had you on quite often, and I heard that you were on Sue Cochran today. What would you like the city of Chicago to understand about a community that is under fire?
Well, they need to understand that in Chicago, and especially the south side and west side of Chicago, you're dealing with neighborhoods where you have young African-American males who are very frustrated, very angry, and they're living in hopeless situations. You know, it's economically deprived. The educational system has failed them. There's just total breakdown of the family. And so when you add situations like this, it's like adding gasoline to a fire that is already lit. And it's a very tough situation, a situation that I'm hoping and praying that we can rectify in the future.
Well, and you mentioned education. You know, that's, again, we've talked about that on this show, where it's an access to progress that seems to be limited in a neighborhood that we have isolated in the city of Chicago. And, people get angry and they look. I want to ask you about this because we were watching a lot of the protests, and I'm not sure if you're familiar with periscoping.
Absolutely. I was on Periscope earlier watching the same protest.
I will have to follow you because there was Peter Nikias, who is a reporter for the Chicago Tribune, was broadcasting, live broadcasting from the protest. And you can read those comments, right? So people will have questions or they say things. And it's sort of overwhelming when you see people write things like, good, another one less welfare mouth to feed. Or I don't have to, this nice language, all the vulgarity. Who's going to listen to you anyway? I think that there's something to be said for people who are outraged. How can we dismiss a community because they're using vulgar language? Doesn't mean that they somehow deserve treatment that is dehumanizes them, I think.
Absolutely. What people have to understand is, first of all, we have freedom of speech in this country, and that's one of the reasons why I love America. We not only have freedom of speech, we also have the freedom to demonstrate our First Amendment rights. And so, for people to be upset about people's language and things that they say, and then in return use the same derogatory comments toward others is foolishness. And I hope that one of these days that our society would elevate to a level to where people could have dialogue and discussion and be on opposite sides without having to demean the other person. But we have a long way to go. It's the history of America, unfortunately, that racial tensions are always, something that has to be dealt with.
Pardon me, Pastor. Our newsman, Rob Martier, needs to jump in.
Yeah, Patty, we've been telling you that the protesters were lingering around Lower Wacker Drive near Congress Expressway. Apparently now they have made it up onto Interstate 290, and they are blocking traffic in both directions.
Well, I hope everybody's being safe. Pastor, so that's where the protest has moved. That sounds like something that could be dangerous for people to be on the highway. We were talking about language and the form of protest because people right now are going to be annoyed. That's going to be what it is now. They're going to be like, why did you block traffic? But, this is a community, and we've talked about this before when there were riots about Ferguson, when it's happened in the last year. I don't know how we can question a community's frustration and rage. And, yes, we don't want, I guess if it doesn't affect us, it's okay if they are protesting, I guess is the point of view.
Right. It's all right to protest and demonstrate, but we need to be civil, and we need to have protests where we're not breaking laws and violating laws. That does nothing to further the cause of justice.
Right.
When you're protesting and demonstrating, there are still laws to follow. This is America, and people need to abide by those laws regardless of the situation. And at no time ever do we have a right just to break laws because we're angry, we're mad, we're upset. Yes, demonstrate. Yes, protest, but do it civilly.
And our listener, Rich, has a question about the outrage. Hey, Rich, thank you so much for hanging on so long. What did you want to tell us?
Hey, I'm not real articulate like you guys are, so
I get lost in my own thoughts all the time, Rich. You're fine.
Yeah, me too. Well, I like the lighter subjects. I drive trucks, so lighter subjects makes the night go by better.
Sure.
But I fully understand why they're protesting, the loss of that young man's life, being killed by a police officer. I understand that. But I don't understand them, the violence that they bring upon through their protests. Like I just heard in the last newscast, they're throwing rocks and blocking traffic. Now, the big question I've got is, less than a month ago, that 9-year-old boy was executed in his own backyard, just about at his grandmother's house?
Yes.
No.
Tyshawn Lee, yes.
Right. I'm terrible on names.
That's okay.
I barely remember mine.
I wasn't saying it for you. I was saying it for everybody.
Okay.
It's okay, Rich.
But why aren't there protests like that in the neighborhoods? The neighborhoods are being, annihilated, There was times when we were safe in Iraq,
Right.
And somebody in the neighborhood has to know.
Right.
Right. I think, first of all, and thank you, that's a good question, but people are frustrated and they do demonstrate about the violence in our neighborhood. That's one of the things that I'm actively engaged in, making sure that I try to do everything I can with black-on-black violence, with young black males killing young black males. I'm very passionate about that, and there are a lot of people who are just as passionate as well. So there are protests and there are things that we talk about concerning that. But when you add race and when you add police authorities into the mix, it takes it to a whole nother level for some people. But I will say again that there's still no reason to use violence. Throwing bottles at the police and things of that sort is still uncalled for. At no time should we ever break the law, even though we believe the law may have been broken against us. We should not trespass just because others have trespassed, and we should not have violence just because others have violence. That's not the way to do it. You know, if you live life an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, then that leaves everybody blind and toothless, and we don't want to do that.
Exactly. And again, listen to each other. I think that we tend to shut down conversations by believing so strongly on our point of view. We have to listen to each other. Yes,
we got a text message from the 630. I think it's extremely important to follow what the parents have been requesting, which is keeping the protest peaceful in order to keep his legacy, the legacy, a positive one and not a negative one. This comes from Mr. Kite.
I agree. I agree completely. We're talking to Pastor Corey Brooks, who is really been a vocal, just so vocal about the need for level-headed protests, and also trying to draw attention to the need to bring an end to violence in the neighborhoods in Chicago that are really at disadvantage, and we continue to isolate communities by not offering the same level of education and access to mobility as we do in the rest of the city. Pastor, can you hold on for a moment as we take
Absolutely.
A break? Appreciate that.
Absolutely.
We'll be right back with Pastor Corey Brooks. You're listening 720 WGN Treats. You're listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, and we are, of course, talking about the big news story of the day, and it's very important. Pastor Brooks, Pastor Corey Brooks is on the line with us. What are your thoughts on releasing this video? Is this something that you think was a positive development, or do you think that it's harmful to everyone in general?
Well, I think that it should have been released. You know, we have a Freedom of Information Act, and we ought to, again, abide by the laws. When there's information that's supposed to be released, it should be released. The sad thing about it is that it's released almost a year too late. And I think if it had been released earlier, we would not be in the situation that we're in right now. And the tension that we're dealing with would not be at the level that it is right now. I think to not release it a year ago and to hold it all this time has only heightened and made people more angry.
And have you watched the video?
Yes, I have.
What are your thoughts when you see that video of Laquan walking down the street and then being shot?
Well, I'm angered by it more so because I wanted to be hopeful and believe that maybe this young man did lunge at the police, and so maybe his judgment, you know, he made a judgment call because that's what we were told. But after seeing the video, we know very well that the young man did not lunge at the police. He was in no danger. The policeman was in no danger at all. And that, when you see that, that's what makes it so dramatic, and that's what makes a person so upset about it, because you feel like you've been misled.
One of our listeners, Patrick, wanted to join the conversation. Hi, Patrick.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you. What do you want to say?
A couple of things. Well, going back to the boy that was killed about a month ago, and the comment about not going up in arms about that and in that community. And I think one thing that I thought of is, you know, why does that community have to be up in arms? Why can't
everyone feel the same outrage? Absolutely.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And the other thing is, I'm a former Chicago public school teacher and taught on the Southwest side, and I feel like, you know, we really need to help our communities, and we really need to bump up education and really start to fill these neighborhoods with the things that they need, the economic things, the education,
yes,
and come together as a city and not as neighborhoods, or that's
yes.
not in my neighborhood, it's not my problem.
I agree, Patrick.
You know, this affects everybody.
Yes, I agree. Yeah. What do you think, Pastor, about that?
Absolutely. He hit it right on the head that we're dealing with areas of deprivation, educational deprivation, food deprivation, economic deprivation. Mm-hmm. And when you have those things in neighborhoods, in a country like America, in a city like Chicago, it is very unfortunate. There is no way in America and in Chicago that we should have neighborhoods that are barely surviving and people are not able to have options and opportunities. That just should not be in America, but it is in almost not just Chicago, But in every major city in America, you see these same issues, these same situations over and over again.
Yep. That's Pastor Corey Brooks, and we thank you so much for your time. Go to coreybrooks.com to keep up with what he's doing these days. And we thank you again, sir. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Thank you so much.
More after this at 720 WGN.